Welcome to Peds in a Podcast, where our team of specialists shares with you tips on all things health and development for your little ones. My name is Leanne Tran, and I'm one of the psychologists here at Peds in a Pod. Medication for children's attention or behaviour is often a challenging idea for parents. Today, our paediatrician, Dr. Megan Yap, talks about how and why these medications are used and how they fit into the bigger picture. Thanks for listening. So, Megan, thank you so much for joining us today.
It's all right. Thank you so much for having me.
You're welcome. So we're going to talk about a topic that's a really common one, I think, for our paediatricians here, and it's talking about the role of medication in more behaviour and attention, so not kind of the medical sense of medication.
Yep.
What kind of medications do you commonly use for behaviour and attention in kids?
Okay, so there's a few different groups that we use, which we'll talk a little bit more in detail in a bit, but essentially we use medications that are able to positively affect the way a person's mental state is by altering their brain function in some way, and we cause transient changes in their mood and their behaviour and their attention. But I think the most important thing to note about the use of medication in kids where we're trying to support attentional behaviour is that it's, in the vast majority of cases, medication is used as an add-on therapy or an adjunctive therapy, where the mainstay of therapy is psychology or psychotherapy that really helps us sort of get down to the root of the problem and strategically change the behaviour where it starts for that child.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so they kind of sit side by side.
And, absolutely, yep. Yeah. Okay. And they're not a magic bullet that we use on its own.
Yeah, okay. And what kind of, reasons or, problems, issues do you use medication for?
Okay, so the main ones that we probably look at in developmental and behavioural paediatrics and general paediatrics would be ADHD, or attention deficit hyperactivity disorder, mm-hmm. of which there are three types. And essentially we're targeting behaviours like hyperactivity, impulsivity and poor attention and concentration. We look at using medication to control violent and aggressive behaviours, sometimes self-injuring behaviours that we mm-hmm. see in some of the children that have conditions such as autism, where they have a tendency to self-harm. Oppositional defiant disorder and conduct disorder is another big one. Mood disturbances like depression, anxiety, and then obviously psychiatric conditions, which are quite rare in children, but mm-hmm. things like schizophrenia, bipolar affective disorder and psychotic conditions.
Right, okay. I guess, I'm a psychologist, so from my point of view, I think it can go well together sometimes, in that the medications can kind of reduce the difficulties kids are having enough to really benefit from the interventions that
absolutely
are and putting in place.
That's the aim of the game, isn't it? Like trying to reduce those target behaviours such that the child is able to function without causing too many side effects.
Yeah, sure. So what kind of, you mentioned side effects, I'm imagining the different types of medications might have different side effects. So what kind of types of medication do you use?
Okay, it depends on the indication that we're treating. So in kids that have the attention deficit hyperactivity disorder, we group the medications broadly into stimulants. Mm-hmm. So they're medications like Ritalin, dexamphetamine, and non-stimulant medications, of which there are a couple of different types. And we can talk about that in a little bit more detail if you like later. In oppositional defiant disorder, we often use the stimulant medications again, particularly in children who have coexisting ADHD,
mm-hmm.
because the stimulant medications are useful for both attention right. and concentration, as well as reduction in impulsivity, which is what we often see in kids with the oppositional defiant disorder.
Right.
And then possibly other medications, depending on symptoms. So things like antidepressants, anxiolytics, or the medications that we use to treat anxiety mm-hmm. in children, antipsychotics, and some of the other non-stimulant medications. And then in children who have anxiety and mood disturbances, we use with the antidepressants or the SSRIs. So SSRI stands for selective serotonin reuptake inhibitor. You don't need to worry about that too much, but that's the main group of antidepressants that we use in children. And there are, of those, there are quite a few, but there are only a select few that we tend to use first line in children because there's limited safety and efficacy data in kids. In very severe cases of behavioural disturbance, we will sometimes use antipsychotic medication, but I think I can speak for the majority of paediatricians in that we try very hard to avoid that if we can help it.
Okay, sure. So it sounds like you're trying to, I like how you're talking about what the symptoms are. So you're not trying to give medication for a condition or for a diagnosis. It's about looking at what actual difficulties the child has and how medication can help with that.
Absolutely, yep.
So there's a wide variety of medications, like you mentioned, that help modulate mood, behaviour and attention. So the main group is stimulants, or that's probably what I hear a lot about when I have children come to me who might have learning problems and that kind of thing.
Yep.
Can you talk us through the benefits and the risk for all? Potential risks for those medications?
Yeah, absolutely. So the two major stimulants, or actually three stimulants that we mainly use in children, would be methylphenidate, which you find in Ritalin, Concerta, and Ritalin long-acting. There's dexamphetamine, and then there's also a longer-acting stimulant called listexamphetamine that goes under the trade name of Vyvanse. The benefits for the stimulant group of medications, the main one, I suppose, is that they are very, very effective for what we use them for. In not only a large proportion of the children that we're treating, but also with a very large effect size.
Right.
So what that means is that it works. So most of the kids that we use it in, it works for. And then the magnitude of the effect isn't necessarily very small. So you won't be left thinking, oh, I think that medication worked in the child. You'd be like, wow, yep, that's
right.
I can really notice a difference.
Yep.
And that's what we find a lot with parents and feedback once we've started these sorts of medication.
Yep. Okay.
We see improvements in things like attention, concentration, organisational skills, memory, and particularly working memory, which is the ability of a child to hold on to little pieces of information and manipulate them to come out with an answer. Task completion, compliance and concordance. So sometimes it makes them a bit more agreeable to things.
Okay.
And then at times it can help also with their mood, their irritability, anxiety and also their self-esteem, because they feel more able to organise themselves to get a task done. So they tend to get that higher sense of achievement.
Yeah.
And that is cumulative over time.
Okay.
We can also see quite a significant reduction in the impulsive behaviours that we try to control in these kids. The drawbacks or the risks, every medication that you could possibly use has side effects, and this group of medications is no exception. The side effects that occur with this group of medications are actually fairly common, but fortunately, despite the fact that they do occur in quite a large number of children, they tend to be mild and they tend to be transient. So I usually say to parents, if they can push past that first week or two when we start a new medication, often the side effects that they see will minimise and then disappear.
Yeah, okay.
Okay. But the most common side effects that we see would be appetite suppression, sleep disturbance. Because they're a stimulant, they're a bit like a really strong cup of coffee. They can increase your heart rate. They can increase your blood pressure.
Okay.
And they can sometimes make kids feel a little bit more anxious or a little bit jittery,
like
we do when we have too much coffee or caffeine.
Yep.
We often will see that some children, particularly in the first week or so, will be a little bit more emotionally labile. So they'll burst into tears at, the slightest thing. And in some children, it can make them aggressive or agitated. However, on the other hand, in some children, we use it to help with aggression and violent behaviour.
Right.
So it really depends on how that individual child reacts
yeah.
to the medication. There is a very small risk of cardiac complications in children who have a positive family history of, you know, cardiac arrhythmias or who are at higher risk for cardiac problems. And then there's also a very, very, very tiny risk, but serious risk of in children who have a positive family history of psychotic mental illness, that it can potentially precipitate such an event in those kids that have that risk
mm-hmm.
already.
Okay. In my experience, when I've had families come and talk to me about, and they maybe trying medication, or they're often worried about the side effects, but I've found that here anyway, they always talk about the paediatricians being really responsive to their feedback about the side effects, and really, especially in those first few weeks and months, of really checking in and monitoring and making sure that everything's going well. So absolutely. I think that is really reassuring for parents.
Yeah, and it's really important, and I think I can speak for the vast majority of paediatricians to say that, you know, we don't prescribe lightly.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we take it very seriously, and we take the safety and the well-being of our patients as a huge priority, and that's the way it has to be.
Yeah, yeah. Definitely. So you talked about also the stimulants used in kids with oppositional defiant disorder and other kind of behavioural difficulties. Is the use of medication different in that group of kids compared to the ones with ADHD?
Yeah, okay, that's a really good question. I think in terms of the risk versus the benefits, so the side effects and the target behaviours, the profile is quite similar. However, in terms of the pharmaceutical benefit scheme, which is that scheme in our country mm. that where the government helps us to pay for medications for certain conditions so that medications are more accessible to the general population,
yeah.
the government will subsidise stimulants for children who have a diagnosis of ADHD,
mm.
but they will not subsidise for children who have oppositional defiant disorder or conduct disorder. It is possible if you're physician feels that it's appropriate to still prescribe that medication to obtain those prescriptions, but they are then prescribed privately, which mm. means that the government doesn't sort of meet you halfway with the cost. You actually have right. to cover the entire cost of the medication on your own.
Yep.
But that's okay. something that you have to negotiate with your doctor if you feel that that's something that would be appropriate for your child if they don't have ADHD. Mm. The literature, if you look through, if you do a proper search and look at the studies of the use of stimulant medication in oppositional defiant disorder versus ADHD, the literature suggests that you should only use stimulants in oppositional defiant disorder if the child has coexisting ADHD.
Okay.
So if your child has just the oppositional defiant traits
mm-hmm.
but doesn't have the attention deficit, the hyperactivity and the impulsivity, then it's likely that your treating doctor will say that particular medication is not appropriate for your right. child.
Yeah. Okay. So, I mean, stimulants is probably the biggest one that I talk with parents about, and it might be too much to talk about all the medications used in children for these kind of difficulties, behaviour and attention. But the two other big groups are probably antidepressants and mm-hmm. antipsychotics as well.
Yep.
Can you tell us a bit about those things?
Yep. So, again, I could probably talk for an hour on each of those
yeah.
because they're, you know, the pharmacology is quite complicated. But sort of in a nutshell, I guess the most important things with the antidepressants are the benefits, I suppose, the benefits versus the risks. Mm. So the benefits would be better mood, reduced anxiety, and then from that flow-on effects to the child's self-esteem, how that then affects their attention and concentration because they're not feeling anxious and sad all the time.
Mm-hmm.
We can see an improvement often in their academic output, so right. how much they're able yep. to produce at school academically, their level of academic achievement, so we might see a difference in their report cards,
mm-hmm.
their social relationships at home and at school, and I guess their general quality of life and their general health can look better when we can improve their mood and their anxiety. In terms of the risks of the antidepressants, again, common side effects tend to happen fairly commonly. The most common one that I tend to see would be nausea, vomiting, headache, potentially sleep disturbance where mm-hmm. kids are waking up all through the night when they're on them, and then tummy upset. Again, if you go low and go slow with the dosage of these medications, often you can avoid the side effects altogether.
Okay.
And there are also some tricks that we use when we first start using them, like introducing the dose at night time. So if the child feels a little bit nauseated or a bit sleepy on the medication, it doesn't matter because they're going to be asleep anyway. You kind of bypass that. And then the kids that find that they're waking up all through the night because of the medication, we shift the dose to the morning that they don't have that sleep disturbance during the night. I guess with the antidepressants, everyone's really worried about this theoretical risk that we have of increased suicidality mm-hmm. in teenagers. And I think it comes back to, and yes, that's a huge concern for all parents, but I think it comes back to what we were talking about before, where we monitor the children closely, we touch base, we make sure that they're tolerating, we check back, you know, and if there is a problem and the child is not tolerating it, then we, you know, weigh up the situation and we either stop it or we reduce the dose significantly and reassess what the options are at that stage.
Yeah, sure.
Okay, so then the other group that we were going to talk about were the antipsychotics. And I think what we touched on before was that we try to avoid using these if we can, because they are a group of medications that don't necessarily have a very nice profile of side effects, and the side effects can be quite serious.
Okay.
And, you know, there's particularly with the newer antipsychotics, there isn't a lot of evidence for safety in kids. And so I think prescribing in a situation where you don't know necessarily what the safety profile is going to be can be tiger country. So the main one that we tend to use and the main one that has the biggest body of evidence behind it would be risperidone.
Okay.
It's really only approved for use or subsidised for use in children who have aggressive and violent behaviours or self-injuring behaviours mm-hmm. when they have a diagnosis of autism.
Okay.
And in which case the government will subsidise and approve the use in those children. I guess what we can say about the risperidone is that it is really effective in the target behaviours that we are looking at, so self-harm, aggression, violence. But if you look at the literature, again, because of the long-term side effects, mostly what is recommended is that you only use it short-term, so like a period of, you know, 8 to 12 weeks, and then you wean the child off. So we're trying to break the circuit of really bad, violent, self-injuring behaviour and then trying to get the child off the medication. The side effects, I keep talking about how the side effects are really bad and stuff, but essentially the worst ones with the risperidone are longer term effects. So they occur when the child has been on the medication for a period of time.
Right. Okay.
They quite significantly increase a child's appetite. So there can be significant weight gain, sometimes obesity, and that weight gain is not necessarily reversible when the child stops the medication, so we don't like them being on it for a hugely long time.
Mm-hmm.
It can cause metabolic derangement. So by that I mean things like it can quite significantly increase the lipid profile and cause hypercholesterolemia in children. And there's also another hormone in the body called prolactin, which occurs naturally, and I guess the most common situation that we hear about it in is when women have babies, they have prolactin surges, and it helps them to develop breast tissue and to produce milk.
Right. Okay.
So that can happen. That can be induced by high doses long term of risperidone.
Yeah,
and we do worry about that in children. Not that necessarily development of breast tissue or milk production is harmful, but it's awful for the child, particularly if they're a teenage boy who's aggressive and violent and they develop breast tissue and start to lactate. It's really not a desirable side effect, and it's not something that we want for any of our kids prematurely if we can help it. So there, I guess, long term as well, we really have to look at the increased risk of cardiovascular disease, which I think is quite high really compared to if you're not on the medication. And then there are other drugs in the antipsychotic group that are used a bit, such as aripiprazole and quetiapine. But if you look at the literature, there really is not a lot of evidence for the safety or efficacy of those in children. So rightly so, I think a lot of paediatricians are quite hesitant in prescribing them because it's risky, and we can go low and go slow. And sometimes in situations of desperation, we might use them, but generally we try to tend away.
Mm. So it sounds like really it's about, first of all, it's about thinking about the symptoms that you're looking at treating with the medication, but then it's also about weighing up what's in the child's best interest, both short-term and long-term. And,
absolutely.
Yeah.
And there are some situations where the risks to the child and to the family outweigh
those
the risks from the side effects.
Yep.
And in those cases, sometimes we have to go down that medication path, but it's a very much an individual evaluation of the situation.
Yeah, that's right. And I think it's, I mean, you'd know more about this than me because I don't prescribe any medication, but I think there is a bit of a weighing up as well about the benefits of medication compared to the side effects as well. And that for some kids, there's no perfect option or perfect solution. So it really is about thinking what, on the balance of it all, is the best situation for a child.
Yeah, absolutely. And every child is different. So some kids might get side effects, others get none at all.
Yeah.
And in those children, yeah, absolutely go down the path of the medication that helps improve their academic performance, their quality of life, their happiness and things. But in the kids that are miserable on medications because of the side effects they're getting, then sometimes no medication is the better option.
Yeah, sure. I've learned a lot today
about medication.
Yeah, because it's, it's interesting to see it from the different side.
Yeah.
So if you were to give any kind of top take-home messages for parents about the medication in this area, what would they be?
Okay, my absolute number one tip would be management of expectation. Although medications are very useful tools for the target symptoms that we use them for, they are not a magic bullet. So they're not a cure. They're not going to magically make all of those problems that we have had go away. Mm. They're a tool to help us to use psychotherapy and other really route-changing behaviours, like behavioural changes to those children. So they're a tool. They're not a magic bullet. I guess secondly, that with like with any medication, we've alluded to it before, there are always risks and there are always side effects that we need to consider and weigh up with respect to the benefits and the risks. And for every child, that'll be different. And so just because, you know, a friend of your child's from school might be on a medication, it might be working well for them, it may not be the right thing for your child. Mm. I think initiating a medication, any medication in a child, is a complex process of weighing up, you know, pros and cons, and then negotiating what's acceptable to the child and the parent in terms of those risks and benefits. So it's not always a straightforward process. You might go in thinking, yep, I want this medication for my child, but your pediatrician will talk you through that and help you to weigh up whether or not this is something that we should do. And then I guess lastly, to remember that not all medications don't suit all children, and there are always going to be some children where no medication is better than any. But again, it's a process of trying to weigh that up for your particular child in your particular situation, and that's something, a discussion that you should have with your pediatrician.
I think too, a comment from this, from my experience in working with families too, is that when you've got the medication and you might be confident that you've got it right, kids still go through their regular ups and downs of behaviour as well.
Yes.
So there are times when even, you know, behaviour will increase if it's, you know, anticipating the change to high school or you've had some difficult situation, and it doesn't mean that then the medication's not working or it's not right.
Right.
You have to consider it in the context of the normal ups and downs.
Yes. So every time your kid has a flare-up, it doesn't mean you have to up the medication.
Exactly.
And every time they're great, don't think you have to come off it.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, it's a trying to find that happy, stable medium.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah. And then just to, you know, still expect those normal childhood things.
Yes, absolutely.
The blips. I call them the blips.
Lots of blips.
Well, that's great. I really did learn a lot today. So it's going to be helpful for me in working with families as well to share a bit of this insight, but I will also direct them to your, you know, the episode and where you've got other information about it. I think it's really helpful.
Cool. Thanks, Leanne.
Thanks so much.
No worries. Pleasure.
Thanks for listening to Peds in a Podcast. If you found listening to us useful, we have plenty of resources on our website, including blogs, articles, and videos. If there's a topic not covered that you'd love to hear about, you can get in touch with us on our website. Visit us at pedsinapod.com.au.